wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That it is time for Dear Science. We're joined in studio by Kushla and not Athena, just a Kushla. My mind's just not in the right place today. How are you doing today?
Good, I'm good. How are you?
Good, a little bit scrambled as you can clearly tell. Yeah. I was totally not just writing my scripts very last minute before this. We've got some very interesting topics today that we haven't actually not addressed the audience yet. So what are those topics?
So we've got Prozac, mummies and crystals.
Yes, let's start off with the mummies because apparently they smell nice.
Yeah, so I know, right? Like this was a headline I could not go past, right? So, you know, you've been to the museum, you look at the mummies. I look at them and I kind of think, wow, like that mummification process, that's amazing. Look how well that's preserved. I have never in my life thought, I wonder how that smells.
Oh, absolutely not.
Exactly. You know,
I think when you do imagine that, it's not a smell you want to imagine either.
Exactly. Turns out we're all completely wrong. So it turns out we're also a bit of a minority. A lot of people are actually interested in how mummies smell. And so there's been this study recently put out about, basically how mummies smell. And the descriptors that kept coming up were woody, spicy, sweet, floral notes, which they said perhaps were from the pine and juniper resins used in the mummification process. So it kind of sounds more like a wine tasting, you know, where they do the smell.
Sounds like the notes of the perfume I wear.
right. So it's amazing. So what they did, they had nine mummies up to 5,000 years old. And all these mummies had been stored or on display in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. And they've used chemical analyses, but they also used a panel of human sniffers to do this.
A panel? Who puts their hand up for that?
I don't know.
Apparently the people are interested in knowing what a mummy smells like.
Yeah, and I didn't read it, and the stuff that I read didn't mention it, but I imagine they had to do some training on, you know, like, how do you describe smells and stuff in beforehand. It was not something I'd never thought about before, but probably in the mummification process, scent was probably quite important, right? Mm. Because if you smelled good, it was pleasant smells, this was maybe a reflection of like purity, whereas if it was a bad smell, you know, it was corruption and decay and these sort of things. And, you know, like this whole process was about, you know, the body and the spirit being preserved for the afterlife, right? So it's not kind of maybe surprising that smell was important. As you can imagine, these are, you know, 5,000-year-old mummies. You can't go taking samples.
Yeah.
So all the sampling was non-destructive, and it's basically you have your human sniffer, so they're just going and having a smell, or you, with the chemical analyses, you're putting in an adsorbent material that you're then using on scientific instrumentation with things called GCMS, gas chromatography, mass spectrometry. And it's basically you're sampling those compounds that give the smell. They're called volatiles and they come off. And so what they were really hoping not to see were indications of microbial degradation, and they didn't see any. So it says that they are keeping these things in good condition. And yeah, and they smelled good, which I'm still a little bit like,
I have
wow.
So many questions. I have so many questions.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do these smellers get involved in this project? Why? Also, I feel like with mummies, because obviously they're thousands of years old, would they not lose their smell?
Yeah, well, so this is the thing, right? So even though they're smelling good now, that may not have been what they smelled like back when they were mummified, because you do get a lot of chemical reactions. You get evaporation, you get oxidation. Even the storage conditions could be changing that. So it's not necessarily the same scent profile that it was when it was first mummified. There may be some way, I guess, to look at the chemicals and the compounds there and now, and if you know something about the history, you might be able to make some guesses at what it was initially. They'll still do work. One of the things they really want to do out of the study is create smellscapes. So you go to the museum, you look at your mummy, and now you smell your mummy as well.
Like, awesome. That's exactly what I want as a patron to a museum.
And just one final thing that I also found really cool, which I was glad you brought up perfume. So there was a study 2 years ago which looked at a jar containing mummified organs of a noblewoman. And they were basically looking at this to identify embalming ingredients and then have some guesses about what the origin of those ingredients were, and they can tell you about trade routes and stuff. What one of the researchers in this project then also did is they worked with a someone who makes perfume, and that to actually create an interpretation of the embalming scent, and they called it Scent of Eternity.
That's a that name's really awesome.
Yeah,
that's a very awesome.
That was very cool.
So yeah. when should we expect mummy smells on the market?
I don't know, right? Like this could be a way to, you know, get some science funding for these archaeologists.
I would be so interested. Okay, now next topic. What do we have for our next topic, Kushla?
So let's talk about Prozac.
Yes.
Now everyone's probably heard of Prozac and knows of it in terms of it being an antidepressant drug. What some research has recently come out about that it maybe has more uses than that. So Prozac falls into a group of drugs called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And these drugs are basically prescribed to help with mental health disorders. And the way they work is we have nerve cells, they carry their messages for us to do things and how we think and how we move and such. And so one nerve cell will communicate with the other nerve cell by releasing some chemicals. And then, you know, the receptor nerve cell takes up some of those chemicals, goes, yep, I've got the signal, and releases them again. And those chemicals will go back to where they came from. What these drugs do is they stop this happening in the case of serotonin. So the serotonin gets released. It goes to the receptor cells. They get the message, but then it doesn't go back. And so you get more serotonin in the blood. And so we don't really know yet specifically why this helps with depression and these mental health disorders, but we know that it works for a lot of people.
Yeah.
What has also been observed, though, that's kind of interesting, is that these selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which I'm just going to say SSRIs for now on.
That's definitely a mouthful.
They're anti-inflammatory as well. And what they noticed during COVID was that people were taking these sort of drugs tended to have less severe COVID infections and were less likely to develop long COVID. And so there's kind of like, there's, you know, some protective effect here. Like, what's going on? There was a study that, mouse study, as we do. So the active pharmaceutical ingredient, so the thing that does the job kind of in the Prozac, is called fluoxetine. And so they basically gave this to some mice and then tried to make the mice sick with sepsis. And the ones that we were given fluoxetine were protected against sepsis. So as a side note, sepsis is when, you know, our immune systems do a pretty great job, right? And they do their best to protect us against infection. But sometimes our immune system kind of overreacts and it's like all hands on deck and everything goes haywire. And you can get this thing called sepsis. And this is something you never want to hear your doctor say to you that you're getting, right? Because it's life-threatening. It's basically you can get multi-organ failure, and the worst case is it's death and that. And so, you know, with this mice study, they found that fluoxetine was protecting against this, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And if you think about when you take a treatment for an infection, what you really want it to do is you want it to kill that infection, but you also want it to protect your body, right? Like you want it to protect your tissues and organs. And so this is the optimal. And so this is what they thought fluoxetine might be capable of. And so this is what the study has looked at. They basically took mice and they took two populations. So they, with one of the groups, they gave them fluoxetine for a period of time before the study. And then one they just let live and do its thing. And then they dosed them both with bacteria.
Right, yeah.
And what they, again, what they found is the group that had the fluoxetine pre-treatment didn't get sepsis. They also, after 8 hours after giving the bacteria, they sampled them just to see what sort of how much bacteria each group had. And the group that had the fluoxetine had less bacteria. So there's some antimicrobial effect. So we're protecting against the tissues and we're killing the infection. So this is good.
Yeah.
They investigated a bit further, and it turns out that one of the things that happens in sepsis is you can get, like, just they call it hypertriglyceridemia. So you just get a whole lot of triglycerides in your blood. And so this isn't great for your heart and your metabolism.
Okay, yeah.
And so with having this fluoxetine, there was actually a molecule released that stops this happening.
Mm.
And so they're like, this is kind of cool. Like, it's actually doing what we want it to do. But, you know, like, has it got anything to do with the serotonin? Because that's why we've developed this drug in the first place. This is why we use it. And no, it has nothing to do with the serotonin at all.
Interesting.
They basically had another group where they had mice that had circulating serotonin and some that didn't, and they'd been given the fluoxetine, and no difference. So now they need, what they were kind of interested in now is seeing if you could use fluoxetine in a dosing regime for people that, or starting with mice, obviously, that have sepsis. So could you use it to treat sepsis? Because one of the real problems with when people are getting sepsis is you go, okay, well, you could use anti-inflammatories to basically make the immune response not so big, kind of thing. But then you might fall victim to the original infection, or you could get a new one and stuff. And so they're thinking, you know, like maybe this is a way to have a treatment for sepsis. They want to know if other of these types of drugs, these SSRIs, are good in this way. And yeah, so it's kind of, it's nice because it's a drug that we already produce. We have, we know kind of what its side effects are, which some of them admittedly are not nice. So it's maybe not a drug you want to be taking all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you really, like, there are people who need to take it, obviously. But yeah, so it opens up a new area of research for this drug.
That's very, very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Now we have 2 minutes.
Yep.
For our next topic.
That's good, because we didn't have much.
Okay, cool. Okay. Awesome, awesome.
So basically this was just to, last week we talked about, last couple of weeks ago, we talked about quantum computers and how they use crystals to maybe be quantum memory. Recently a study's just come out where they use those ideas, but they're actually thinking of it in terms of classical computing. So classical computing, you have zeros and ones, and so they've basically developed these crystals in this material where you can store information in a zero or one state, and the idea being that because you basically do it in the size of an atom, that you could store like a terabyte's worth of data in a millimeter cube.
Oh, right? That's awesome.
So they haven't got there anywhere near yet. It's proof of principle that they can use these crystals in this way to store this information. But it's this idea that we can use like these quantum computing inspired ideas to inform classical computing so that we can get much better memory storage in smaller spaces.
That's very awesome. Very awesome. Well, thank you very much, Kushla, for joining us on the show today. It's been a pleasure as always.
It's been great.
And yeah, we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you, Motet. And thank you, Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.